welcome to The Logstat, the Army's premier podcast on all things sustainment, where we analyze new developments, discuss current trends, and forge the path ahead for the next generation of sustainment soldiers. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of The Logstat, Captain Garrett Powell. Today, we're going to be continuing our mini-series on the trends at the brigade and below as we explore the different combat training centers, or CTCs. Now, if you missed last week's episode from NTC, the National Training Center, then be sure to go back and check it out. There, we explored the first CTC and the way heavy units operate in desert environments. Now, we're going to be diving into some lighter units and the swamps of Louisiana. You guessed it, it's going to be the Joint Readiness Training Center, or JRTC, at Fort Polk, Louisiana. This CTC draws its roots back to 1987 at Little Rock Air Force Base in Arkansas before moving over to Fort Polk in 1993. It became the Center for Military Operations on Urban Terrain, or MOUNT, that played a vital role during the War on Terror and counterinsurgency operations. To guide us through the various trends and how sustainment units are operating at JRTC, I have with me today Lieutenant Colonel Dan Cole, who serves as Lima 6, the Senior Sustainment Trainer at JRTC. Lieutenant Colonel Cole is a native of Colorado and commissioned from Boise State University as an ordnance officer in 2004. He has served at Korea, NTC, Fort Wainwright, Fort Drum, Fort Hood, and Fort Polk with deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan. His years of experience in the tactical force and as an OCT are going to make for a very thrilling conversation today. He has a Bachelor's of Arts in Music Education from Northwest Nazarene University and a Master of Science in Business focusing on the supply chain management for the University of Kansas. I'm really thrilled to have you on the show today, sir. Welcome to the conversation.
Hey, Garrett. Thanks for having me on here. I think what you're doing here hosting this podcast is a phenomenal resource for the entire sustainment community across the Army. So I'm looking forward to our discussion today. Help some sustainers and logisticians and those who are logistics curious really get into what it takes to be successful in large-scale combat operations, not just here, how to win at any CTC.
Well, thank you, sir. I'm really excited to have you on. Just very much thank you for that opening. And even before we get into the dialogue today, I know as we're talking, you know, pre-recording, it's just always nice to see or neat to see how small the Army is. Looking over your bio, it's like, oh, there's a lot of places I've been or the same units that I've served with already. So it's always neat to see when fishing or look at someone's bio, it's like, oh, this is where our paths have crossed or we've had similar experiences.
Yeah, it's always fun. I mean, someday you may find yourself here sitting in the same chair for Lima 6.
That is very true, sir. You never know where your career path is going to take you. I mean, never in a million years thought I would be doing podcasting and helping out with the journal with the Army, and here I am today. So you never know. So the first thing we kind of want to get into is, so you've had some experience even before you're Lima 6 as an OC back at NTC, correct?
Yeah, I was there for 3 years, did 2 years with Gold Miner team and then 1 year with Bronco team, and that was probably more well suited to my background, having been in a strike organization and adjacent to heavy. So I got a lot of experience there. Like you said, I've been with 10th Mount at Fort Drum, so I do have some light experience as well. And then strikers is kind of the in-between, can do both pretty well. So I think a pretty good fit for either environment, either at NTC or at JRTC.
Okay, so you've got to have that experience there as an OC. Now, did you get to go there as well as an RTU unit?
Yeah, so I've actually never had a rotation at JRTC. I've got 5 at NTC as the rotational unit. But then while I was there as an OC, I racked up 26 dirt rotations. So I know the box extremely well. I can probably navigate that terrain just as well as I could in my backyard here. Then Fort Polk is very different type of environment, obviously, but even just the training area is not a one contiguous area. So you're crossing some public highways to go from, you know, whether it's the Fullerton box or up to Pisong where they do the live fire. It's a very different environment, not just the fact that we've got swamps and trees and things like that.
So I guess that is definitely more of a unique, where you got NTC as one giant landscape. They just push you out into the box, say good luck. It's literally a sandbox, quote unquote, to play in. So you have a lot more of a challenge there at GRTC then when it comes to now, because you said you have to cross different roads and stuff. It's not all one continuous training area.
Yeah, which I think lends itself well to the type of training that we're going to be doing. We'll probably talk about it here in the questions, but just the idea of, you know, at NTC, you own the entire battle space. You can go wherever you want. You don't have to worry about any civilian traffic. Here, when the, you know, 21st Infantry Division gives you specific times to be at crossing points and things like that, that's real. Because there's the Vernon Parish Sheriff's Office that is controlling those routes, the Louisiana State Highway Department, that is enforcing deliberate timing, just like you would be competing for division routes as you go through different battle spaces. So that's one of those unique things. You can say those things with 52 ID out in the desert at Fort Irwin, but there's really no enforcing. The turtles are going to cross when they're going to cross, and the donkeys are going to go where they're going to go. But you're not going to run into San Bernardino County traffic just driving through the box. That's not a thing. So, but it is here.
So, and that's just things for, you know, the audience to be aware of. Units that are coming to GRGC just need to be aware of. Like me, I would have never in a million years even thought of that. That would be a planning factor to even think of.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, having had experience, you know, as an OC, and as, you know, part of a rotational training, you know, the RTUs, like, what's it like the kind of like the differences, like from your experience being on both sides of it now, how would you walk us through that?
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny when everybody thinks about what a CTC is like, most people will anchor their experience as when they went through as the RTU, and everybody just has nightmare stories of all the challenges that they went to and the adversity they had to overcome, and just going through that crucible leader development experience has come with all kinds of challenges.
What do you mean? I thought it was paradise.
Yeah.
You know, walking like a vacation.
The sunny destination of Fort Irwin, the desert island there. But it's the rotations are designed to be difficult. I kind of describe it as the Hunger Games. So somebody's in some building twisting knobs and pulling levers and making things hard, making it challenging and forcing you to go through those things. And it's designed to be that way. Nobody apologizes for it. When you're here as an OCT, you get to see behind the curtain. You kind of know what's generally going to happen. But whether it's Geronimo here at JRTC or if it is, you know, Black Horse at NTC, it's a living, breathing enemy. They're going to do their own things, and they're going to pop up in places and cause the chaos that occurs with all the CTCs. And again, that is by design. So as an OC, we are partnered with the units. I like to describe it as, you know, we are learning with you. We are teammates. We're on your side. We're also learning right along with them. So it's not like I've got the playbook. I know all the answers. That's not the case. So I learn just as much as every unit that comes through here, just learning right along with them. It's just my responsibility here as the task force senior for sustainment to help take those lessons learned and everything and give it a different perspective than the unit that went through it, kind of package it up and share it back out with the rest of the Army, whether it's through, you know, observations, insight, lesson learned type of articles or feeding back into CASCOM through the TID and the transformation lesson learned management team. There's a lot of different ways we can get that out there. But, you know, there's so many things about life as an OC. I think we'll get to that a little bit later. But suffice it to say, it is a completely different experience when you're coming through as an RTU versus when you come and you're assigned at ACTC as permanent party as an OCT.
So that's where we'll kind of start this conversation on the side of the RTU then, because I know you've had a lot of experiences. We talked about going there. You have a lot of as the training unit, and you have a lot of experience as being the OC. So what trends have you seen from all your experience for like the different rotational units going through?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So I've got this like top 10 list for the challenges we're seeing at JRTC. And I'm good friends with Goldminer 07 out at NTC as well. And so we've compared notes, and our top 10 list of challenges, it's basically the same. We've got different words, different pictures to describe the exact same things. So these challenges are hard, and they've always been hard, and they will continue to be hard. The operational environment will change. The material solutions that are being used will change. But I think these fundamental challenges are always going to be the same. And so this is what I use whenever I interact with rotational units when they come here for the LTP, the leader training program, to get them ramped up, ready for a rotation. And just, you know, I can go through the quick top 10. Usually I do this as a full MD or LTD, but, you know, survivability for sustainment, probably the number one challenge. The short version of that is when I was a younger officer, I was very focused on our ability to do our sustainment mission. We do that all the time. As a force, we are very good at doing our sustainment mission. What we're not great at is all the lethality things and the survivability things. So if we are putting emphasis on that first, then, you know, our soldiers will be able to live to go do their sustainment mission. You can't do any sustainment activities if your formation is destroyed by the enemy. So that's the number one thing that I would, you know, recommend for commanders to focus their training on. The concept support. You know, we're always organizing the CTCPs, the FTCPs, our support area. But do we have the command nodes and the flexibility to make survivability moves, things like that? So, but our concepts of support, we're great at doing that. The schoolhouse has put a lot of effort into making sure our officers through professional military education are, you know, set up on how to do a good concept of support. The synchronization and execution, that's where it gets tough. How do you take that concept and turn it into a detailed plan that is synchronized and can be executed? And you've got all the things that you need in a sustainment common operating picture to use that as an effective fighting document. Number four would be the brilliance of the basics, those fundamental soldier tasks, fighting position construction, how drawing out a range card, operating under limited visibility. Man, I hate seeing units come out here and they're just solar powered. You can't do any nighttime operations, limited driving at nighttime. And then the tactical combo experience. The commanding general, General Curl here, he described it, and I've stolen this and adopted it. Communications is like the original sin. When you look at root cause analysis and what caused any given failure, whether it's synchronization or survivability, all that eventually boils down to ineffective communication. So if you're getting good at those basic tasks, you probably could be okay. Maintenance, I coach a lot on the life cycle of a 5988. It's obviously a little more vital in a heavy community, but when you're a light formation, you see maintenance kind of getting thrown to the side. And so I try to bring that back to the forefront. You need to be able to, you know, close the distance with the enemy. So if you've got an 8K ground movement that you could turn into a 3K ground movement because you've got operational fleet, then you have to do that. That's one of our lethality advantages. So don't, just because you're in a light organization, don't throw away your focus on maintenance. MDMP, I think we'll probably talk about that a little bit here and the troop leading procedures, but like the focus on getting sets and reps, tactical MDMP, is going to set, you know, your unit on a good footing as you come into NTC. Rehearsals, never waste the time. Always do great rehearsals. SOPs, the bumper sticker is, you know, good units have SOPs, great units use them routinely, but the very best continually update their SOPs. And then the NCO participation. That's the, like, the close out my top 10 list. Or do we have NCOs that are just focused on refueling generators, or have we invested in their professional education so that they can go do MDMP in the absence of an officer by their officer counterpart the time to go get some rest, or, you know, do all of the other things that we're being asked to do. So just huge proponent of investing in our NCOs, empowering them to go do the things that aren't just, you know, refueling generators. That's an underutilization of their talents and experience. So that's kind of the summary of the top 10 list for challenges?
I think you just need to pretty much get that made into like a poster, almost like just viewing it. I don't want to compare it to like the Ten Commandments, but it's like you could just have like made it into like these little tablet little things and have as a poster.
Yeah.
For units.
Yep. And I'll share this out. I'd be glad to share this and get it out to as many people as we can.
Because I mean, it's I think each of those points you just kind of went over is what we'll get into is like how to, that really helps. If you can overcome these different things, you are going to be successful. I mean, you talk about the SOPs. I mean, how many units probably be like, okay, we're about to go to a CT series rotation. Oh, wait, where's our SOP at? Let's just pull that off. Okay, now we made it. Now we check the box. We have a quote-unquote SOP, but then they don't even use it.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny, like I can read through the list. It's all easy, but it, you know, it's kind of like swinging a golf club. Anybody can swing a golf club and maybe make contact with a ball. But if you want to make contact with a ball and have it go a long ways and go where you had intended to, it's very difficult. Just like these top 10 lists here.
Yes. And it kind of connects to, and it's one of the things I just saw before I got on here with you today that I believe you posted with the recipe for an effective U.S. Army logistics common operating picture.
Oh, yeah. Nope. That's one of the things that we're working here on a team to help develop. I don't know what we'll eventually call it, like Lima's cookbook or something, but some of these recipe cards. So we've got like the core ingredients that have to be present in any of our fighting products or planning products to really make them effective tools. Like I said, at the schoolhouse, both in the SPO course and at the Captain's Career course, we spend so much time investing in what it takes to do the planning, preparing our estimates. But when we transition into the execution mode and you have to have a log cop or sus cop that really is your running estimates and drives decisions for commanders, that's kind of where we start to see things struggle. Especially here at the National Training Center, when you're trying to balance, you know, digital versus analog and things are on the move. And then there's the chaos of, we don't know what's happening because we were victims of the original sin. Nobody can communicate.
So I know there's a lot of different aspects that go into a unit being successful, not just in a CT certification, but really just any operation they're going to be faced with. And this is kind of one other question I'm going to be asking to each of the CTCs just to be able to see like what kind of helps make them successful. You just provide your top 10 list on some of the trends that you're seeing there. So before a unit even hits the ground, I know it goes to planning actions, kind of connects to some of your top 10. So can you walk us through some of the planning actions that you see that makes you unit successful?
Yeah, I think honestly, the number one thing is to have a great attitude. Understand that you are coming here to learn. You're not coming to win. The operations group has a great talent at finding that like threshold of failure where things are really hard, but if it's too hard, then you start to like fall off this cliff and people just collapse. And so we dial the scenario back just before somebody hits that critical failure point and things collapse so that we continue to learn. So if you have a great attitude and understand you're just coming here to learn, to test some new ideas, you know, do that kind of stuff, and you're not coming to win, you're going to start off in a great spot. That's rule number one, and just have a good attitude. But you know, the MBMP that it takes to go through the pre-deployment activities, the deployment activities, and start to, you know, formulate the rough plan of what you're going to do. You know, when units come to a CTC, they don't know the tactical scenario that they are going to fight. That's a pretty closely held secret, regardless of where the CTC is. That's something that a unit is given once they arrive, and that forces that compressed timeline for MDMP. But the more reps and sets you can get at doing MDMP in a tactical scenario on like tactical concepts, the better off you'll be. You'll get to start validating some of those planning estimates, not just taking whatever OpLog planner or QLED or choose your favorite, you know, planning tool, whatever that spits out. You'll be able to do some more critical thinking and refine that some. And you know, if you're just getting reps and set at doing MDMP on an org day activity, like that's not gonna convert to success in a tactical scenario here at JRTC. But thinking through and applying the principles of sustainment are really going to be the most critical thing as well. Like my favorite being anticipation, trying to think through what that warfighter is going to need before they even know that they need it will help stay ahead of the scenario. But getting reps of sets at MDMP is going to get you through, at least get you to the starting line.
So you bring up a great point when it comes to the military decision-making process is, you know, a lot of times units don't focus in on that until they get to the box or they get there. And it really is. It's all about reps and sets, not just going through, as you said, the battalion org day or something. It's planning through and doing actual, going through doing actual exercises. And that's really going to help you set yourself up for success.
Yeah. And then you have to do it using the tools that you intend to use and a space that you intend to use. So if you're, you know, huddled around the table in the S3 shop and everybody's got their cubicles and they're able to slip away and go have lunch and all the, you know, gravitational pull of home station training, if you allow that to creep in to your reps and sets, you're not going to have as great of a learning experience.
That's very true. That is very true. Train as you fight, as we always say.
Exactly. Yep.
So when it comes to JRTC, we already talked about one aspect, being able to have to cross an actual road, public roadway. Is there anything else that makes JRTC unique compared to the other CTCs?
Yeah. So the environment, when I got down here, really surprised me. So out at Fort Irwin, there was a lot of dust, wide open spaces. And, you know, here at Fort Polk, I had no idea that, like, the timber logging industry was such a big deal. So we've got these really tall pines, a mix of, you know, coniferous and, you know, leafy plants and the trees. And so the environment will change over time. But as you think through, it's not all just swamp. And when the desert wind blows and the sand just kind of carries on for miles, we still get the same wind, we get the same thick dust, but instead of blowing across the desert, it's like captured in these hallways of trees. And so, like, visibility and maintaining good spacing between vehicles, whether it's a movement or a maneuver down the roads, it's a significant challenge. The water crossings are real water crossings here, and things that you can just drive across out at Fort Irwin become significant emotional events. Just a short, you know, 6 foot wide creek can be, you know, 6 feet deep, and that becomes a challenge. We've got one area in the box where there's a, you know, an old 70 ton AVV bridge where, you know, it's a very canalized piece of terrain. All the trucks down here have no issues driving across it. But on the rare occasion where we are augmented with armor for a rotation, that really changes how a unit can employ their formation and how are they going to close the distance and try to destroy the enemy. Very unique terrain here. I think the Fort Polk training areas probably lend themselves better to the type of combat that we would anticipate as a force. And we're able to do some other unique things. So we can apply these fictitious bodies of water, creating off-limits areas, or you start to isolate places. So we can actually exercise an island campaign. People have to feel the effect of long lines of communication separated by large bodies of water, forces, air movements, things like that. So I'm really excited to be here. A lot of these unique challenges, it lends itself well to what we're going to do in the future.
That's awesome. You got this to be able to get how you can change your terrain, essentially. You just box off areas then and say, oh, this is, like, now, I guess, notional water, bodies of water, and you can't cross.
Yeah. Or sometimes it's real bodies of water. We've had a particularly rainy season, and things start to pop up. Dry spots are no longer dry.
I guess that's, as I joked or said at the beginning, I guess we're more of the swamp areas coming to play.
Absolutely.
So Can you kind of walk us through then what you've witnessed when it comes to command post operations, specifically, like, you know, when it comes to sustainment fighting products?
Yeah, so the days of Taj Mahals are long gone. Command posts must be light. They must be agile. But the challenge is finding that balance between survivability and functionality. And that balance, it's a balance, is going to shift depending on the enemy threat. And so I always tell people, start with the red pen, think about what the enemy is doing and what those threats look like. And then you can start to tailor things. And if, like, we see a lot of support areas being disaggregated into the clusters here, and you can really separate them a long ways, and they're no longer functionally supporting each other. Whereas at NTC, you could back away from each other 2 kilometers and still see each other. So here, that's one of those great things. But, you know, your command posts must be light, agile, and operationalize. My recommendation really is, if you can, as a unit, set up your command posts in the garrison setting and operationalize all of the things that you normally do, and you really start to identify where are those gaps and seams and the things that are stress test will come to reveal themselves. And so you get a lot more comfortable with that. You start to figure out what analog products do I need to have. The, you know, command post feng shui is absolutely a real thing. You have to figure out how things are displayed, where it's located, so that you can start breaking it apart, send the TAC out, or whatever. But if you're only analog, then you can't share those products as well. So you still have to have some focus on the digital version of your products and balance that risk and reward between analog, digital, and you know, survivable versus functional.
No, I think you bring up a good point. Is, you know, if train back at home station in a controlled environment, like when I was the NHAC commander up in Alaska, we did the talk X's. We would set up the talk out in the motor pool outside the battalion headquarters and just set it up before an exercise, making sure, hey, we have all the pieces that we need. This is how we want to set it up. It gives the team an opportunity before you even get out into the field or go to a CTC what it needs to look like. So everyone knows, okay, my job is to set up this part of it. I need this to bring with me. And then you start to say, okay, wait, do we have enough space?
Right.
Commander can come in and be like, nope, I don't like this layout. Let's fix it. So if you can get that all done in home station, then you don't have to worry. Like, you can hit the ground sprinting.
Yeah. Load planning, packing lists are figured out. You're not just like ground to, you know, default to analog because you don't have the right pigtail or the right electric cord. That's unacceptable. If you forget something at the CTC, you can't just go back to the motor pool and grab it. That's not a thing.
You're telling me I just can't get, you know, someone to airdrop it in, maybe, you know, overnight ship it with Amazon or something.
You know, we've had that idea batted around, and I have yet to see anybody be successful with it.
But it is right. Like, you just, if you can just do the training at home station and just practice setting stuff up, like, it's as simple as, hey, motor pool Monday, we're going to set up the talk, and then we can, set up the talk, and you can practice with the communications, because people can do rollouts. They can do their PMCS. They can roll out and they can practice sending communications up to talk. And that's, you're knocking out so many birds with one stone there.
Absolutely. You know, if it takes you longer than 30 minutes to put your command post into operations, then you need to relook things, because that's too long. You know, it's command posts. I've started, you know, the analogy is just like a PAA for the fires guys. So a battery shoots a fire mission, then the guns come down, they move within that PAA so that they are survivable and not just eating counter battery. If you apply that same principle to sustainment command nodes, so, hey, you've got a big burst, you've done some meeting, whatever, then you break down the command post, move it to somewhere else. So when you light up on the electromagnetic spectrum and the enemy starts to target you, because the transparent battlefield is what it is, if you can be seen, you can be killed. So you need to keep moving. So set a hard time that you have to meet, run the clock, set up your command post, move it around, be agile, and figure out what talk or command post feng shui is going to, you know, answer the mail.
You said before, it's not the Taj Mahal anymore. You can't set up these giant areas. I know that the trend is getting into base clusters. How have you seen those set up when it comes for sustainment units?
Yeah, so it's difficult. I'll say that for sure. Whenever we've got units that, you know, they do a great job setting up in clusters, they are tucked deep into the wood lines and trying to mask their location as good as they can, it still comes apart if you've got a log pack, if the DSSB is delivering your resupply to the, you know, brigade support area, and they're clogging everything up. They created both a huge visual signature and EM signature, and it's difficult to maneuver around. So you have to offset all of those LRPs so that you're not giving away your locations, whether it's at, you know, the division to brigade or brigade to battalions and battalions to companies. Offset all of that stuff. And if you consider, as soon as you use an LRP location, once that location is now burned, the enemy knows where it's at and they're going to start targeting it. So you have to have lots of options out there, or set up a rotation. You've got maybe three options, and today you use option A, tomorrow you use option B, tomorrow's next option C, and just keep rotating that, prevent, you know, doing enemies doing pattern analysis on all of the things that we do as well. So start with the red pen, think like the enemy, and go from there.
So when it comes to that, because I know we're transformation contact, there's a lot of changes with formations right now. And I know units are trying to adapt their formations to new ways of fighting. You know, you just mentioned talking about base clusters. So what have you observed when it comes to the changes with TIC?
So we're still kind of launching into that. So there's been limited efforts, depending on, some units have new equipment we're testing out, other rotations will have a different formation tried out. But you know, it's those little incremental changes and challenges that working through that, and then going back and relearning or dumping that back into the bigger army, so we can take those lessons learned and start to figure things out a little bit more. But all the different changes, it's pretty fascinating to watch. The one thing I would say is, as a command, if you're one of the TIC units, you got to knock down those guardrails and don't be afraid to try out new things. Look for ways to use low budget material type of solutions, and understand that the failure is a teacher. So you have to fail fast and improve even faster. And that's really the only way that we're going to get after, you know, whichever part of the .mil PF that you're going through for that innovation. Just understand that, you know, failure is the teacher, and you're only going to do that by trying out some new stuff, underwriting that risk. So again, we're not trying to win at NTC. We're trying to get better. That's where the focus needs to be.
Exactly. And you keep saying it, like, when you go to these rotations, don't focus much on winning, to focus on learning so that you can try out new things, experiment, see what's working and not working, so that, you know, when you have to do it for real, you're not trying to do all that, where then at that point it can cost lives at that point. Get this done while you're in a training environment so you can learn what's the best way to do something.
Yep, absolutely.
And then kind of on that, you know, we're always looking for a focus to increase our lethality. So when it comes to combat skills for support soldiers, how can we be more lethal?
Yeah, so you have to focus on it during your training plans. Don't just relegate it to your leader time training or sergeant time training. That's not enough time to really become an expert and master those fundamental lethality tasks. You have to, you know, some things you just have to do for every single training event, regardless of what it is. Always put up your camo nets, always draw range cards, you know, dig holes, make fighting positions, do all of those things every single time. Don't take that easy route. You know, a lot of times we're kind of optimizing garrison type of operations for that setting. And by doing that, you are bypassing critical training opportunities. So if you're doing just a, you know, delivering class 9 to an FSC's, you know, or CLC, you operationalize that. S3's got to do an order, S2's got to give you that intel brief, and they need to identify where that offset LRP is going to be. So the FSC and Alpha Distribution Company, or your HSC and the CLC, they're meeting there, exercising the link-up procedures, doing all those tactical tasks that you're going to be expected to do at a CTC anyways. That has to be built into everything. make sure your unit goes out. You could easily turn a simple operation into a phenomenal training event that your young soldiers, your young paratroopers, they're going to understand this is the standard. Every time I go out, if a unit has not shown up within 5 minutes, I am now digging a hole. I've put camo net over my truck. Doesn't matter if it's at Fort Bragg, if it's at Fort Hood, doesn't matter. That's the expectation. Once they understand that, that buys you time as a leader, because you don't have to go back and teach them how to do that stuff. They've done it a million times already because you've operationalized the garrison setting instead of optimizing for that garrison operation.
I like it. You know, get back to the basics and everything that we do, and reps and sets and it all. And it'll just build that lethality one step at a time. So like how you put all that. So when it comes to JRTC specifically, is there any good additional tips or tricks, so to speak, for units that are coming out to JRTC?
You know, it's funny. It kind of alluded to that. Everybody always wants to know how they're winning at JRTC. And again, have a positive learning attitude. You got to practice those fundamentals. There's really no magic key to success. You just have to have that good attitude. I need to put it on a t-shirt so I can pull my top open like Superman, just operationalize the garrison. The more you get after that, the better off you'll be. Because right now, whenever somebody does not do that, they go through this really steep learning curve. Like how we did it at Fort Bragg or Fort Campbell is not how we're doing it in Torbia. So you've got to overcome that. But if it's just, hey, this is the way that we do things, and it is the right way to do things in a tactical setting, then you've cheated that far ahead in an operation. You don't have to overcome that steep learning curve.
So say I'm gonna be an OC in an auto unit. So I know we've talked a lot about on the unit side, just overall going to a CTC, going to JRTC. But say I just got assigned as an OC. What good advice do you have somebody who's about to go fulfill that role?
Yeah, rule number one for being an OCT is to be a good dude. OCTs, is, like I said, we do as much learning every rotation as the RTU. We are on their team. We are partners through that experience. But you have to be an expert at doctrine, which is kind of tough right now because we're kind of in this transition point. The doctrine for formations is in flux, but that just means you need to do more reading. Start to trade ideas and learn from all your counterparts. So if somebody's coming here to join the SAS Force Sustainment, I expect all of my team to understand every other warfighting function. Any CTC is where you go to earn a doctorate in warfighting. If you think you know some stuff, just come down here, be a guest OC just for one rotation, and you will still learn more in that 2-week period than you have in the 2 years of your KD time. Guarantee it. I challenge anybody to come down here as a guest OC and prove me wrong. Prove to me that they already knew all those things and they were experts at it. Because the real truth of the matter is, even if you had all the answers, being able to transfer that knowledge to your teammates that are actually executing the mission is an impossible task. You're going to learn with them. And as soon as you think you got it, Geronimo or, the 423 BDET or whatever unit Black Horse is replicating, they're going to throw a wrench in things and they're going to bring you a new challenge that you didn't expect.
The challenge has been set. Like it.
Another thing, if you're going to come and be assigned at a CTC, you need to take advantage of the most predictable schedule you will have anywhere in the Army. Maybe besides at the schoolhouse where you're teaching. We've got our rotation schedule locked in months, and in some cases, more than a year in advance. And specific to JRTC, if you enjoy doing outdoor things, this is the place to come. If you like hunting, fishing, those types of things, not only do you have that predictable schedule, but you'll be able to take advantage of like Kisatchee National Forest that is right outside our gate. And in some areas, it's inside the gate. We do have some co-use with the training area. So all those things are right there. Phenomenal hunting opportunities, fishing. And then if you're not into that, we are kind of within 3 hours of lots of, less than 3 hours to Houston, about 3 hours to New Orleans. We've got Baton Rouge nearby. So it's adjacent to a lot of things. Within a day's drive, you could be on the beach in Florida from Fort Polk. You have to take advantage of those types of opportunities. So there's a lot to offer being assigned at JRTC specifically.
And it's good that you highlight that, because I know a lot of people look at it as going, oh, Fort Polk, what am I going to do? There's nothing there. That's what you hear people talk about. So it's good to have hey, there is a lot to do here, and it's in relatively close location to a lot of things around it.
Yep. And even the garrison, like you mentioned, I've been to a lot of different places across the Army. I've seen how different garrisons support things. And the garrison here is phenomenal. We've got more opportunities, whether it's concerts coming in or movie nights. They'll put a big inflatable thing right outside the Fort Polk Commander's headquarters. We've got a great golf course right here. And being a CTC, like 310 Mountain, the Patriot Brigade, they have access to world-class training facilities that aren't being used during rotations. There's no competition for that stuff. If you were looking at, this is kind of going probably a little deeper, but the queue for commands and KD jobs as a major, it doesn't exist. There's not a division headquarters for you to sit on staff and wait for your time to move down to a brigade. If you get assigned to Fort Polk, you're going to move straight into one of those key developmental assignments. And here's the real cheat code. If you want to have some stability for your family, you can. It doesn't matter if you're a captain or a major, you could be assigned to the Patriot Brigade, do your KD time, and then PCS across post over to Ops Group and learn even more being assigned to as an OCT. And just like that, you've provided your family 4 or 5 years of stability. So many good reasons to be assigned to Fort Polk.
I mean, that's a good one right there. Especially for someone like me, it's getting ready to start his major's time. That is a good cheat code, as you say, for stability.
Yeah, absolutely.
So anything else that we missed today that you wanted to highlight to the community?
Yeah, so for just all sustainers, don't allow yourself to be a leaf eater in a meat eater's world. You have to fight for a seat at the table, whether it's in plans or in execution. You have to come to the table equipped with all of the things that you need to really partner with your operations team, partner with your fires planners, and be value added. Don't just sit back and wait for somebody to ask, what's the sustainment plan for this look like? At that point, it's too late. You've been letting the operations guys dream on acetate, and they've cooked up some plan that is totally unexecutable, not supportable. So fight your way into the plan. Do not just sit back and wait for somebody to ask. You just really dig in, force yourself to be that type A or your extrovert. I'm an introvert by nature, but I have learned, if I don't force some of these things on the team, we're going to end up in a bad spot because I'm the only one looking at this sustainment picture for an operation sometimes. So if everybody took that attitude, our entire sustainment community would be better off.
So even on that, do you have any additional advice you want to provide to the sustainment community, even outside of the CTC world?
Yeah, just keep learning. Use that professional curiosity and learn as much as you can from as many different people as you can. We talked about the value of the podcast. We've got professional reading lists all over the place, but there's lots of great podcasts out there to learn as well. Professional viewing. There's some great movies and leader development that occurs in that kind of stuff. But you have to allow yourself to be professionally curious and go learn as much as you can. That's one of my favorite things about being at JRTC. My teammates, we're not off talking about basketball scores or football scores as much. We're usually having professional dialogue about some relevant topic to the warfighter and how can we share the good things with everybody else and help steer people away from the bad practices. Just that type of environment here, both at JRTC, I had the same thing at NTC, sitting on the Hummer line. We're just exchanging great ideas and digging into the things that we've seen and how do we share that with everybody.
All right. So it's always about educating yourself, increasing that, just your professional knowledge. Like, that's what I love about, you know, doing this podcast and, you know, listening to others, specifically, you know, listening to the Crucible, the GRTC experience. And a shout out to you and your team down there. They put on a fantastic podcast. And it's another way to sharpen my toolkit.
Absolutely.
Because that's what helped drive me to create this for the community. Is like, I know I'm always driving somewhere, or I'm at the, you know, running or something. I can just listen. I like to listen to things. And this is what helps me, for the way my mind works, to learn things.
Yep, absolutely. And that's the great thing about the, you know, the podcast is you're not just reading, you know, Dead Carl Clausewitz. You've got somebody participating, bringing new ideas. And if you have follow-up questions, you can actually reach out to the people that are on the podcast. They're real people. They'll answer questions. It's one of those unique things.
I mean, and exactly. So on that, like, I know people are going to want to send you specifically from today cards and letters. Someone might be like, well, I'm thinking about being OC. What do you think? So if people want to be able to reach out to you, where can they?
Yeah, so Global is a great way to get an email to me. I get messages on Teams all the time. But, you know, I'm a huge fan. You mentioned what you saw on the U.S. Logistics Officer Facebook group. There's a companion to that on Microsoft Teams where they're also putting some CUI things. But that Facebook group is a great place to just like throw an idea out and get a lot of differing opinions, because there's people from every corner of the Army, both active and retired, and Compo 2 and 3, and you'll see a lot of great ideas exchanged there. That group is probably, well, that marketplace are probably the only reason I still have Facebook. It's vital to a thriving organization having that. I don't know, it's like a virtual Hummer line where people are out there talking about ideas and learning from each other. But Outlook, find me on Global or in that Facebook group. Great places to find me.
That's for me, it's great. That Facebook group is a great way, just as you said, just pitch ideas out there, ask questions, and it's an easy way to connect with people across our community.
Absolutely.
But I just want to really, you know, thank you, sir, for, you know, taking the time virtually to meet me today on over here. And just, we went through so much. I know we can continue talking when it comes to CTC experiences, specifically over at GRTC, but just thank you so much for adding to the dialogue, specifically this mini series that we've created and looking at the trends of the brigade and below, because it's just nice to be able to say, okay, we talked last week on NTC, now we're seeing it from the GRTC experience, and just see how the similarities, the differences. Just wanted to really appreciate and thank you for adding to this dialogue for us.
Yeah, thanks again for having me on. I'm looking forward to getting some feedback from everybody that listens to this, and keep exchanging great ideas and learning from each other.
So thank you, sir. And that is just two CTCs completed. And don't worry, we have two more to go for this mini series. So please be sure to stay tuned as we continue this journey with JMRC and JPMRC. We just have so much more to get into. You don't want to miss it. But that is all we have today, folks. As always, Sustainment Leaders Start Here. See you next time. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Logstat. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Please share this episode across your formation and leave us a review. If you have a topic you like here discussed, then please reach out to us at armysustainment@army.mil or directly to me on Global at garrett.h.pyle. Follow us on Facebook, X, and LinkedIn at Army Sustainment. We'll see you next time. Sustainment Leaders Start Here.